And good morning. Thank you for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show. It's Wednesday, March 8th, and the sun is out. You know, I really like it. In the morning, the sun is out. In the afternoon, we get snow and wake up to beautiful snow. And this is, again, the morning show. I'm Susie Prez, your host, and I'm going solo today. And I have guests in the studio. Today we have Lake Ponderay School District Superintendent Sean Woodward. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
It's very nice to have you here. And Chief Financial Officer Lisa Halls.
Good morning.
Did I say that last name right?
You did, correct.
All right. Thank you. And thanks both of you for being here, joining us today. Voting is in 1 week from yesterday, Tuesday, March 14th. And of course, you can vote early. Is the early voting still open?
Yes, through Friday.
At 5 p.m.
At 5 p.m. Friday. So you can still do early voting at the Federal Building Courthouse, old Federal Building. And at the end of the show, we'll tell you where that is and where to go to vote if you wait until Tuesday, March 14th. Before we get started, I do want to say that the weather outside from the National Weather Service, right now they're saying it's 34 degrees. We have a 20% chance of snow and areas of fog. High today, 37. Low tonight, 26, 40% chance of snow. Then we get into more snow Thursday night, and Friday. Highs are 37, low 31, and on Friday, high of 43. Then we go down to 10% chance of snow on Friday night. And it's pretty much the same all the way through next week, too. So that's from the National Weather Service. But today we're here to talk about the levy that's coming up. It's an important part of what is on the agenda for our community. But before we start, I would like to mention that KRFY requested this interview, as it is our goal to inform our listeners. Lake Ponderay School District 84 is the legal tax district for this official levy and is charged with disseminating and clarifying information about the levy to the electorate. The goal is to have an informed electorate. With that in mind, let's get to the informing the electorate. I also want to say that I want to let the KRFY listeners know is if you have a question for our guest today, later on in the broadcast, we can get to those questions, but you can call now because we have our handy guy, Jack, on the phone line to take your call now. And if we have time, we'll get to your questions later in the broadcast. That number is 265-2992. And I'll remind you of that number throughout the broadcast. So let's get to the levy. Are you guys ready?
You bet.
There's a lot of information here. I've studied it thoroughly and I still have questions. So either one of you can answer any of these. You can point to each other to say who's the most knowledgeable on specifics. The upcoming March 14th levy is called the Supplemental Instructional Levy. What does that mean? And what does it cover? That's the big question.
So, yes, supplemental is the legal term, and it feels like somewhat of a misnomer. Part of the reason is because, or the main reason is because it's really more of an operational levy. It is, what will surprise a lot of people, is 82% of the levy dollars actually goes towards staffing. Actually, a third of all of our district staff approximately are funded with the levy. And you can look at it one of two ways. That would be approximately 165 full-time equivalent employees. But if you're looking at headcount, the levy funds well over 300 full and part-time employees. It also supports or actually fully funds all of our extracurricular activities, both academic and athletic. It funds all of our instructional materials, as well as professional development of staff, most of that. It also funds most of our technology upgrades, as well as many other things.
So you're calling it, probably a more accurate term is Operation Levy.
The legal term actually is longer.
Okay.
Supplemental maintenance and operations. And if you look at the ballot, that's how it's scripted. And that's maybe a little more telling, the maintenance and operations component.
And so I'm thinking about these 165 full-time and headcount is 300 full and part-time. I don't want to say what happens if the levy doesn't pass, but I want to get a little bit more into what it does cover. You're talking about 82% goes towards, what was it?
People. Staffing.
That's staffing. So what covers, how many staff members are there? Because someone asked me yesterday, does that mean teachers in the classroom won't be able to be paid? So that's a question I know that is out there.
So it's so total staff, when you consider full and part-time, it's approximately 900 staff members. So a third, 300 plus, are funded by the levy. One of the things that the levy allows us to do is to keep all of our schools open. Right now we have 11 schools, 12 if you count our homeschool academy. But the rural schools, Clark Fork, Northside, Hope, Southside, and also actually our alternative high school, the levy allows us to keep those fully operational. And people say, well, why in the world would you have to consolidate those schools? And well, we do not want to do that. We'd rather keep all of our schools open. The fact of the matter is it's just mathematics. We would not have the staff needed to keep all of our sites open.
And I would augment that answer that we're a service business, we align with national and state averages that your budget is anywhere from 82 to 85% people. And so, you know, there's nothing, we're not an outlier.
Right.
There's no coincidence that 82% of this ballot measure is people and 82% of our annual budget is people.
So it would be a common practice that if the funds weren't there, you would start looking at the best way to meet budget, because that is probably a mandate.
Exactly, yes.
Mm-hmm. Right, under the Constitution, not only does the state have to adopt a balanced budget, but as do all the taxing districts.
Taxing districts, that's by, yeah. Wow, that's interesting. I didn't realize that. Do other schools in Idaho call for school levies in order to meet shortfalls? And if these are shortfalls, why can't the state help out a little bit more? Or are there other sources for meeting these? This would be common questions that people would wonder about, I think.
Right. Those are two important questions. The first question is, are there other schools of the 114 school districts that have supplemental levies in place? And the answer is yes. 82% of them, in fact, have supplemental levies on the tax rolls right now. Here in Bonner County, the three school districts, Lakeland School District, West Bonner, and Lake Ponderay School District, all have supplemental levy ballot measures next Tuesday. The second part of your question could be a very long answer, so I'll probably just hit two important points. The first is particular to Lake Ponderay School District. Geographically and from configuration-wise, we're a very rural school district. We have many small rural schools. But the state foundation or the funding formula only recognizes two of our schools, Clark Fork Junior High and Hope Elementary, as rural schools. But the cost to operate a rural school, you know, we don't benefit from the economies of scale. The other important point is more particular to the whole state. The state of Idaho went into the recession much quicker than almost any other state in the nation and has taken a lot longer to come out of the recession. So why is that important? It's important because over half of the state's budget is the kindergarten through 12 annual appropriation. So in 2009, compared to now, 2017, if we adjust for inflation, that state allocation, that annual appropriation, is still 6% behind dollar-wise. And this is why not only has the number of school districts compared to the onset of the recession increased as far as the number of supplemental levy ballot measures, but also the dollar amount. There's over $188 million this year alone being levied through supplemental levies statewide. Our per pupil spending, if we look at 2009 to current 2017, again, inflation adjusted, is basically the same.
So the increase to the school districts has not changed. Is that
correct?
What you're saying?
Right. The state appropriation, up until the last 2 years, there were millions, hundreds of millions of dollars cut, not only from K through 12, higher ed, all of the agency budgets. You know, agency budgets are health and welfare, the prisons, you know, what the state, as we opened here, has to adopt a balanced budget. And if the revenues weren't tracking, you know, they have to look at the agency budgets to adjust.
All right.
There's another piece, Susie, if I can share, that there has been some concern that we are increasing the levy amount slightly. 2 years ago, we kept it flat while many other districts in our area went for an increase. This time around, some of the surrounding districts, at least one, are choosing to stay flat because 2 years ago they had an increase. So I just wanted to remind people that while we are increasing the amount, we did keep it flat 2 years ago, and we cut $1.2 million out of our budget at that time. We're feeling the effects of that right now, and there comes a point where you have to continue to grow as a system. You do need to look further down the road and make sure you're not cutting off your nose to spite your face, if you will. The increase is really important for us. There's two pieces I'd like to cover. The increase on a home with an assessed valuation of $250,000 with the homeowner's exemption currently pays $22 per month. It will increase by 50 cents per month over the next 2 years. So it's important for us to share that it's a replacement levy. It's not on top of your what you're currently spending. This levy expires at the end of June. And with the passage of this two-year levy, then we'll begin again.
So in other words, currently, folks at the $250,000 property tax or level of property tax are paying $22, and the increase would be $6 to $28.
Let's see.
50
yes.
cents a month.
50 cents per month.
Right.
Per month.
Yes.
But for the year, it would be $6.
It would be $6.
Mm-hmm. So then,
compared to what they're currently paying,
22.
Right. And again, that's on 250,000 assessed value.
Mm-hmm.
If listeners are interested in their very particular valuation and how that would impact them, we have a tax table posted on our district website, which is lposd.org. And you can go to the front and center. It says, you know, information on instructional replacement supplemental levy. And there are fast facts, things to know, and a tax table is there along with my name and my phone number if, you know, you don't fall into the striations of 100, 150. We go up to mm-hmm. $500,000.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're making every effort to help people disseminate the information, because it is a lot of information right now with this levy coming up next Tuesday.
Yes, there is. And we actually, between Lisa and I together, we have had well over 50 meetings at this point. We will continue to be accessible between now and Tuesday. If people have questions, we'd absolutely love to meet with them one-on-one or with small groups. There's still time for that, to just call the district office. There's another piece that we get asked a lot about, and that is, what specifically are you spending these dollars on? Also, if you go to lposd.org, you can see a spreadsheet that details not only the last 2 years' spending, but also details specifically where the increases will happen as well.
A little bit ago, you mentioned that the last levy you had to cut some money out of the budget, or at some point in time you had to cut. How does that impact the operations at the school level?
I'll speak to part. I think Lisa can as well.
And you're hoping to bring those back in, is what I'm imagining?
Well, not necessarily, okay. No. So 2 years ago, we actually took a hard look at our staffing levels. And in our rural schools, our staffing levels were too high relative to the number of students that we had. At that point, we had really hard conversations with staff and with community members and made some hard decisions, but I believe they were the right decisions. So we cut staffing over the last couple of years out of both Hope and Clark Fork, which we hadn't in years past. And over time, everyone ends up impacted. And we want to do it in a fair and consistent manner, and we have to do it based on enrollment. So, and the staff agreed. The great news is, though, I'll use Clark Fork as a wonderful example, was that we put our heads together and they decided, you know what, we'd like to see higher enrollment out here. And they radically changed their program offerings over about a year period and went from about 78 students up to about 117 to 120 students by really listening to people and marketing themselves differently and changing with less staff too, changing how they were expending their time and energy with fewer resources to get even better results.
I think the other important thing that we haven't shared yet is if we're successful with this ballot measure next Tuesday, the district is positioned to cut, we're anticipating about $600,000 out of our budget. We have estimated what our state appropriation will be, and that was pretty much reinforced by JFAC's actions on February 27th, where they've made their recommendation for the K-12 agency budget next year. Then we know, you know, what we're asking the voters for, and blended, our state appropriation is about 66% of our general fund annual revenue. The supplemental levy is about 30%, and we still are going to make program and staffing modifications in order to balance our budget next year.
What kind of part of the job for you guys is to have that fiscal management component? Because in any organization or business, you're looking at how to make ends meet. And it sounds like that's just part of your ongoing process of balancing a budget, is looking how to be fiscally, how to fiscally manage it in a good way.
Exactly. And another piece that we're really proud of, and maybe I can come back for another show, is the fact that not only do we look at, you know, where can we make reductions or trim? But we also look at how are we currently spending dollars, and can we get better results with reallocating how we spend those dollars? And we've got all kinds of new programs over the past couple of years that demonstrates our commitment to that philosophy. One of them is full-day kindergarten programs, experiential learning options, our homeschool academy, and things like that.
We're a public agency, and we're subject to federal and state law. So we're not a private business where we would look at business units, or in our case, schools, and say, well, this school is inefficient. It's a rural school. So let's modify or eliminate this business unit. You know, we don't want to do that. We really support, and our school district and the school board has been vocal that we support our small rural schools, but knowing that they're inefficient. Or another example is, we don't have the choice to bus students if they live more than a mile from the school, or it's not safe to walk to school. Then we must bus them, and our cost per pupil for busing is well over 230% of the average cost per pupil in the state. These are things that under the law we must do, and they're inherently inefficient and therefore costly.
Is there any alternative to that mandate about the busing?
No.
It is a
law. There is one component where our transportation director annually comes before the school board for what are called in lieu payments, where the access to where the student resides is, you know, for some reason unnavigable, or the buses can't turn around, we pay in lieu to the parents to bring them to a spot where the yellow bus can pick up the student.
Wow, that's quite a bit when you consider how big this county is and how many people live in very remote rural areas.
And right. I think we drive over 3,000 miles a day.
That's impressive. I'm kind of laughing, but I get that. Another question. I just want to remind our listeners that if you have a question for Lisa Halls, or who's the chief financial officer at Lake Ponderay School District, or Superintendent Sean Woodward, you can call us right now. Jack Peterson is in the office to take your call. You can call 265-2992. And at the end of the program, if we have time, we would love to ask our guests your question. I wanted to ask one question that kind of popped up. I think, you know, there's so much confusion, but you guys have done an awesome job in getting the information out. But there's always going to be more questions. Is the levy connected to the plant facility levy that was last summer? And how is this levy different from that levy? This was a question that came to me. So,
well, let's first technically answer what public school districts in Idaho can do as far as levying property tax dollars. And the three major taxing options are what's called a bond. A bond is a construction levy to build new buildings or modernize buildings, one. Second is a plant facility levy, similar to the bond. It's to modernize or construct new buildings or array of sort of other capital projects. And that is what Lake Ponderay School District brought before the voters on August 30th of 2016. What's coming before the voters now, the supplemental maintenance and operations levy, first has been in place for 17 consecutive years for Lake Ponderay School District, and it's an instructional levy. They couldn't be more different. And we realize the confusion, and we just encourage you to, we hope that the ballot, where it's line itemed, and there are six different categories of descriptions as to what the ballot measure requests are. If you were to read through that, it would become very clear that this is not a construction levy.
So we're encouraging folks to read the ballot. First of all, go and vote, definitely. And then take your time to read the ballot. I've already voted, but it is instructional.
Right. And the ballot, again, if you have access to our website, is the ballot is there. And if for some reason you don't and you want a copy, you know, please contact Lake Ponderay School District 263-2184, and we can provide you with that or anything else that you may need to make a measured decision.
Another point to make is that there's also been some confusion on social media regarding how we must spend those dollars as they come in, and they must be spent as written on the ballot. So it's not like we can make next year say, well, you know, even though it was voted on to spend this way, we can make other decisions with that. We must spend it as it's written on the ballot.
And as a point of information, all of the sample ballots, Lakeland's, West Bonner's, and Lake Ponderay School Districts are on the county website. And for those that are interested, if you were just to look at either Lakeland's or West Bonner's, it's levying a dollar amount. You know, there isn't all of this narrative and line itemed. And then if you were to compare it to ours, you would see, just as Sean has articulated, that this is what's on the ballot. So we are mandated by law to expend the dollars as they are outlined on the ballot.
Yeah, and this is also a direct result. The ballot change is a direct result of us really sitting down and listening to people, and people telling us 2 years ago that we would like to see a more line item ballot. And we've responded with the way it looks right now.
Is getting prepared for this levy and all the things that you've done to promote it, not promote it so much, but to get the information out to inform the voters, is it consuming a lot of time?
Yes. I I underestimated that before I came here. I've been here 5 years as superintendent, and I was in another state, Washington, where you could run 3- and 4-year levies. So I was used to doing this kind of work as an assistant superintendent, but for us to do this every other year, it's a massive. We need to spend the time on one hand, but on the other hand, it's too bad there weren't other options in place.
Go ahead, Lisa.
I'm in my 13th year here with the school district, and one thing that we haven't asked is, well, why are we coming back every 2 years? And the answer is because that's the law. The supplemental maintenance and operation levy in Idaho can be 1 to 2 years maximum, with the exception if you qualify, that's the first component that's important, to run a permanent supplemental levy override. And there are, I believe, 4 or 5 districts in the state that have these permanent. So this is why every 2 years, and administratively, it takes time, you know.
For those few schools that do qualify to run a permanent ongoing levy that you mentioned, how do you qualify for that? Do you have any clue? Is it the bigger school districts down in Boise and Pocatello, Twin Falls, that qualify?
By and large, so I mentioned earlier that there are 114 school districts, and there are a few taxing districts that have some other property tax options. Boise Independent School District, which predates statehood, for example, has a permanent override. But the general criteria is that you must have had the supplemental maintenance and operation levy in place for seven consecutive years, and it must have represented over those 7 years 20% or more of your general fund, your major operational fund. That's a public accounting term. We as a school district, for the first time, meet those two criteria. Our board did sometime in November of 2016 address this option. I think the discussion was less than 5 minutes. There was unilateral agreement among our school board that they desired to go to the voters every 2 years, and that allowed the voters local control.
Yes, and there's, you know, the community, I think, is fairly divided on this issue. I've had so many people on one hand say, you know what, we're tired of doing this every 2 years. It's somewhat divisive in the community, and some people just frankly get tired of hearing about it. And then we have the other side saying, no, we want you to do this. We want you to stand in front of us every 2 years and allow us the opportunity to hear how you're doing, and then we'll decide at the polls.
And it's state law. You have no option.
Yeah, outside of making it permanent, of which some people are suggesting that the board be encouraged to do so at some point in time, which, as Lisa stated, the board has no interest today at going that route. And that would require a separate ballot measure.
Actually.
Right. We want to hammer home 2 P's. It's not a plant levy, and it's not a permanent levy. Let's repeat it. It's not a plant levy, and it's not a permanent levy.
That sounds like a rah-rah. It's true. It's information.
There's a lot to digest, as you opened, and we want voters to be very clear on what they're voting on. It's a 2-year levy. It you know, of course, if you read the ballot, it says here's the period, it's a 2-year ballot.
There's another piece that we really encourage people: please do not rely on social media to get your information. I'll give you one example. Just last night, I was looking. I try not to, but it's part of the job nowadays. But I was looking, and a lady put on there, please, people, something like, don't be fooled. Read the fine print. They're going to be asking for another $9 million in 6 months. So thankfully, somebody quickly, you know, got onto social media and said, well, actually, here's the ballot. There are so many people that are there on social media now purposely planting. That's an absolute lie, because, you know, I mean, quite frankly, not just misinformation, but please contact the school district if you have questions or you see something on social media or otherwise. If it doesn't really sound right, it's probably not.
I'm going to give you a couple of numbers and information to our listeners to contact the school district. It's lposd.org is the website. Lots of information on there. Or you can call 263-2184, extension 1018.
That's my extension, Lisa Halls.
And you're the financial wizard, so you can get a lot of information out of Lisa.
Yes, or dial 1015, and I'd be happy to speak with you as well.
Okay. I have a lot more questions. I'm going to go see if anyone has called in with some questions, and you can still do that by calling 265-2992. Jack's waiting for your call. We're going to take a little musical break, if that's okay with everyone. It is a very short song. It is... This was in this day in 1962, the Beatles had their radio, this is appropriate, debut in England. And the song that they did was Roy Orbison's Dream Baby. Well, I don't have a copy of the Beatles doing it, but I do have Roy Orbison. So this is Roy Orbison, Dream Baby. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Lisa Halls and Sean Woodward from Lake Ponderay School District. We're talking about the upcoming levy. And this is 88.5 KRFY. And here is Roy Orbison, Dream Baby. And that was Roy Orbison, Dream Baby. Beatles debuted their radio debut in 1962 with that song. And we are back in the studios here live on the morning show with Susie as your host. That's me. And my guests today are Lisa Halls. She's the Chief Financial Officer of the Lake Ponderay School District, and Sean Woodward, Superintendent of the School District. So again, welcome back. And we have more questions. We want to remind our listeners, you can still call us if you have a question, 265-2992. Jack is on the waiting for your phone call. But there are a couple questions. The levy tax rate, what does that mean, Lisa, for 2018 and 2019? Can you break that down just a little bit more for us?
Absolutely. So first, I'd like to share how a tax rate is calculated. There are two components. In the numerator is the amount of money the school district would be levying. So we levy a dollar amount, and then that is divided by the net taxable value of all of the property within the boundaries of Lake Ponderay School District. So that generates a rate. And the rate currently is 0.00176, which means you're paying $176 per $100,000 of net taxable value. So that's what's currently in place. And then the next step for the school district is to project what those numbers are going to be. Now we know that we would levy $8.3 million in year one. And now we need to project the divisor, what our net taxable value would be next year. We've used a very conservative projection of 3%. If you were to ask our county assessor, which I did, to make that projection, his projection is more 6 to 8%. So why is that salient? We use this conservative projection of the property appreciating at 3% because we do not ever want, as a school district, to understate what the potential projected tax rate is going to be. So in year one, we're projecting a 2% increase, which would bring it up to $180 per $100,000 of net taxable value. And then in year two, it would bring it up to $184. If we were just to use the assessor's appreciation at 6%, the rate would actually drop by $1 to $175. Or on his high end, if we were to use his 8% appreciation, the rate would drop from currently $176 to $172. But we measuredly choose to be very conservative with our projections so that when tax bills show up, that we've always made a projection that it comes in at that level or below.
Oh, that's a lot of math for my head this morning. So in looking at this tax schedule that is on the back of this piece of paper I have, you say the assessed value of property and 1 acre of land at $200,000, it's $176. But because of you cut that in half, it's really the $100,000 level.
So the tax table you're looking at, Susie, is with the homeowner's exemption. The homeowner's exemption in Idaho is on property in 1 acre of land. If it's your primary residence, it's up to 50% of that value, or a maximum of $100,000. So if you're looking there at the tax table where there's an assessed value on the home in 1 acre of land of $200,000, they are then paying taxes on $100,000 because of the homeowner's exemption.
Thank you for clarifying that. I think that was a good thing to know.
The other thing that's important to share, is I've said that we're in the majority here. 82% of school districts have supplemental maintenance and operation levies in place. But our rate, because of the rich value of the property within the district, is 20% below the average supplemental levy rate from last year. The Idaho Tax Commission doesn't have those figures for this year. And more importantly, our overall tax rate compared to the overall tax rate in the state of Idaho for public school districts is 48% of the statewide average. And that's because as we opened up, we have neither a bond nor a plant levy in place. And 85% of school districts have either bonds and or plant levies in place. So we're in the minority that we do not have a construction levy in place.
So in other words, it because of the value and what you're asking for, and the value is spread out over all this value of land
right.
and property.
Correct.
So that's good to know too. And what anything else, Sean, you wanted to say about that?
Relative to tax rate, no.
No, okay. That's Lisa's department. So let's get into what these increases and just the levy itself will cover a little more detail. I was looking through, there's the staffing programs, such as extended full-day kindergarten. Do you want to just go down the list and kind of disseminate that a little bit more?
You bet. Lisa and I can both do that. The biggest increase that you would see, and again, you can find this on our website, is in the area of technology. We are adding a fiber optic network, if you will, or fiber lines to our school district, much like the city and the county have been working on. The great thing about this is that we qualify for a grant program called E-Rate, a federal program where the cost of fiber is very expensive. We would not be able to do it without grant support or federal support. The federal support is covering 70% of the total overall cost. Some people have said, well, gee, I know, isn't fiber just like the cherry on top? Do you really need that? And the answer is yes. We would not be asking for something we didn't need. Our service, our internet service, if you will, is intermittent at best right now. And when you're running a school district that relies heavily on web-based applications like we do in a rural school district, we would have a very closed down world if we didn't have access to the web from a teaching learning standpoint and an operational standpoint. So it's critical to the mission of our school district. That's one piece. Another piece I'll get into with some of the staffing real briefly is we have currently two counselors for roughly 2,000 students at the elementary level. One of the counselors we fund. We did that by reallocating some of our resources a year ago. Another counselor we have, we contract out with Kiniksu Health Services. That counseling is paid for through a state grant, and this levy will help us pay for another, and we'll finally be getting close to what we've had 10, 12 years ago. And in my estimation, it's critical that we start paying closer attention to social emotional well-being of our students as well as academics.
As we know, probably the bullying starts at a very young age, and it's not necessarily, and it's something that a counselor can pick up on and help students understand how to be, you know, be socially well together.
Exactly. And we know that, you know, students come to our schools with things going on that are outside of our control. And if those basic needs aren't being supported or met, academics and learning, it just does not happen at the same rate. So that's another piece. You might be surprised to know we only have one school nurse for 3,700 students as well, and a half-time certified nurse assistant. And what people do not realize in a public school setting, students that come to us with that are medically fragile, we serve them. They're a public school. And I've had people in public meetings say, well, you don't really have to do that, do you? And it's like, oh, yes, we do.
Children with diabetes.
Exactly.
You have to know, you have to train your staff on what to do to help them survive.
Exactly.
If something happens.
Yeah, we'll be increasing slightly the certified nurse assistant position of that program as well. Would you like to add to any of those things? Or
No, but I would like to talk a little bit about the process. The process started last October, so October of 2016, and spanned through early January of 2017. We had seven public meetings ranging in length, probably from, I don't know, two to 2.5 hours. All of those meetings are videotaped and posted on our district's website, along with anything that the board was presented with or deliberated over. And there was an opportunity during each of those meetings for public comment. So this was, you know, a long public process, and was, you know, the board gave a lot of thought. Ultimately, in December, there were, what, 6 or 7 potential ballot measures of varying dollar amounts and content.
And this is similar to what we've done in the past. And I do want to also share that we took a big hit in August. There was a concerted effort to defeat that plant facility levy. And there's a lot of things that we learned from, and we will do things very differently in the future. And that's a fact.
I think the key word is process and learning from, you know, what this community is looking at different things. So you mentioned the technology component, programs such as student wellness, extended full day kindergarten, the counseling and the nursing assistant. And all of this came from those programs, Lisa, that you're just talking about, really getting a sense of, probably from the teachers too, what is needed, such as the technology and academic extracurricular activities, but also the teachers getting extra learning opportunities.
Yes. Yeah, no, for sure. And I'd encourage people that either whether you're relatively new to the community or not, if people knew, you know, what were we like 10, 12 years ago? And where are we at today from an academic standpoint, a fiscal standpoint, and a programmatic standpoint? The entire community should be proud, because our upward trajectory has been amazing. But it's not just because of really good staff. It's because we've had a tremendous amount of community support that we do not take for granted. And I think that, again, there is a segment of people, a group out here that's trying to take that away from us and trying to erode the trust we've built over 10, 12 years. And I would just ask people to take a look at where we've been and where we're at today. And these things that we're adding are not frivolous ads. They are ads that we believe that will not only allow us to continue to to perform at the level that we're at, but to also perform at higher levels.
What is the bottom line? Who are you serving?
Well, ultimately, the community members and our kids, our students in the community. And we feel committed not just to the students that and families that are currently attending our school district, but there's many families who choose to go elsewhere. And over the past couple of years, a lot of those families have chosen to come to us. And they're paying taxes here in this community, and we've made changes so that we could support how they wish to educate their children as well.
Lisa, do you have anything to add to that thought?
For those that don't know, Lake Pend'Oreille School District is the largest employer in Bonner County, and certainly in our rural areas with our rural schools, they can be the epicenter of those smaller communities and their vitality.
So this well-thought-out levy request for the vote really has a big impact on the children, mostly, but a lot of employees, and it does trickle down into our communities economically, too. Has there been any studies of that?
There have been national studies that would tie a large employer, say like Coldwater Creek, in that case, declaring permanent bankruptcy. How many jobs are tied to, say, one job at Lake Ponderay School District, and the national studies say another three service jobs. So you're talking about potentially eliminating 300 full and part-time positions from Lake Ponderay School District, and then within the community at large, another three positions for every one at Lake Ponderay School District.
And Sean, anything else? You were talking about some of the things that this levy will cover, and we got to some of those things. One of the things people talk about are the extracurricular activities. And how does the school district and the board see some of these activities as filling out the picture for students moving forward into the big world?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I can speak from experience as many, many, many years ago as a high school student, that I was like many other kids, that I believe that sports was the avenue that helped keep me on the right track, that gave me something to do outside of school that would allow me to stay focused on more productive kinds of things. There's been some fascinating studies done on participation in extracurricular activities in GPA. And what they found is that the more activities you're involved in, the higher the correlation to GPA. There's a positive correlation between number of activities and GPA, which fascinates me, because you'd think at some point you might be doing too much, but that's not the case. So our board believes strongly in supporting extracurricular with these levy dollars. There's some districts that choose not to do that. These things are not funded by federal government or the state government. And some districts say, okay, we're not going to fund that with a levy. And what that would mean is it could cost anywhere between $400 and $500 per sport, which from an equity standpoint and a participation standpoint makes no sense in a community like ours.
You mean the students would have to pay that themselves?
Exactly.
If they wanted to participate.
Yes, and some districts
choose
to do
that. So that would eliminate some people.
Yeah, we have roughly 45% to 50% students come from poverty backgrounds, and we have extraordinarily high participation rates today relative to other school districts. It's absolutely amazing to see the number of students that we are, student athletes that we're serving.
And academic.
And academics both, yeah, from both standpoints. But our board has, there's people in the community that think that we should not be funding that. And again, we just agree to disagree with that sentiment, and our board feels really strongly about that.
Looking at the statistics that you just mentioned, if you want to keep those students active and involved, it sounds like the busier they are, the more on track they are and have a clearer picture of their future. It supports them, is what you're saying.
Yes, absolutely. And just some of the life habits that are formed in these extracurricular activities are just absolutely amazing. And many people who participate in those things growing up would agree with that as well, I believe.
Well, thank you. I think we're getting close to the end of our time, and it would be nice to hear a statement from each of you, but also to go over how does one get to vote. I'm really glad that the ballot itself has a lot of information so that you can be an informed voter even at the ballot box. But there's all kinds of ways to get this information. You can go to lposd.org. They have a great dissemination of replacement supplemental levy and what it covers and the financial picture of it. You can also call 263-2184, extension 1018. And Sean, your extension also is available, and that's
1015.
Are there pieces of paper around town people can pick up too if they don't have web access?
Well, you can come to our district office is the best place, and we've got flyers, et cetera, mm-hmm. that we would be able to give to you.
Okay. And so one last statement. I know the absentee or early voting is still open till Friday at 5 p.m. at the courthouse, which is the old federal building on Highway 200. And then voting is March 14th, which is next Tuesday. And are there places people can go to see where they're supposed to go to vote? Is that also on the website?
We have a link on our website, as well as, of course, the county. I mean, it's linking to the county just as a point of information if you live in the Coca-Lala area. And the county did a sort of a headline article in the local paper recently, but that one polling station has changed since November. We know that Bonner County had a very high voter turnout, 80% in November, mindful that the national average was in, you know, the 50s. And we encourage you to vote with the facts. And if you're unclear of the facts, please take another minute or two to pick up the phone and ask your questions to our district staff.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa. And I would just like to say thank you very much. We've enjoyed a tremendous amount of community support. I don't expect that to be any different on Tuesday at the polls. And while at the same time, I would expect you to continue to ask for excellence out of us and what we do. And that is our commitment to our community and to our students.
So the word is get informed and get out and vote. That's what I'd say.
Yes. Thank
you. We really appreciate Sean Woodward, superintendent of the Lake Pend'Oreille School District 84, and Lisa Halls, chief financial officer of said school district, for coming in today and sharing information that some people may just need to help them be informed. And that's your goal in this. So thank you so much for coming in to the KRFY morning show at 88.5.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we're going to go out with a song. We're going to come back, though, in a few minutes after this song. This is the Beach Boys, Be True to Your School. We'll be right back. And that's the Beach Boys, Be True to Your School. And this is 88.5 KRFY. It's community radio. It's listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. We just have a few minutes left. I want to remind you that tomorrow you can tune into the Thursday edition of the morning show and with Jack Peterson and his guest. Let's see, anyways, he'll be here with his guest. And so please tune in. We're going to go out with a song called Teardrops in the Rain by Mike Wagner. He was my guest on the Between the Notes show last night. We hope you have a beautiful day. Jack, who's your guest tomorrow?
Do we have a microphone?
Well, you can use mine.
All right. Hey, I actually have two guests tomorrow. One is Laura Pilon from, she's a touring musician and musical historian coming to us from the Midwest, but playing a bunch of ancient instruments at the library this weekend, which will be cool. And then some folks from the SHS Grad Night Committee talking about an upcoming event fundraiser for them.
Sounds good. We want to remind you, KRFY is having a party at the Idaho Poor Authority Wednesday, March 15th, starting at 5 o'clock, and everyone's invited. Come on down to the Poor Authority, March 15th. We're going to go out with a song by Mike Wagner, Teardrops in the Rain. We hope you have a really beautiful day. Thanks for listening to The Morning Show.